Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome our poetry panel to Vox Pop. They're here to offer their own poetry favorites. Plus, we are asking you to join in this poetry potluck and call in with published poems from a known author that speak to you. Again, we welcome your favorite short published poems. The number to reach us is 1-800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. And, well, it's always nice to have the Poetry Forum here once again, and we don't do it that often, but Poetry Month is a good time to do it. Before we get to the phones, I want to allow our panel of guests to introduce themselves and provide us with any announcements and or poems they may have. And while Paul Elisha gets seated in his seat, he's a little late today, we'll have Sarah introduce herself. Hi, Sarah Wiest.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's great to be here. It's Poetry Month. We have our poems, and my name is Sarah Wiest, and I've been a longtime participant in the Poetry Forum, and yes, I am also a poet.
Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you very
much. Anything you want to talk about while we get Paul situated here? Any events?
I didn't bring any.
I see. Well, we'll go right on to Paul.
It's good to be almost here.
Hi, Paul. Do you have any volume on your headphones?
Not enough.
What's the number on those, Patrick, our producer? Number 4. Okay. Well, Paul Elisha, how about you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm still call myself a would-be poet.
I don't know about that. You publish stuff. You're a poet.
You know, it's been how many years, Sarah, since we began the Poetry Forum?
I think we started in 1999. Is that possible?
Something like
that. Wow.
Or even 1998.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, so nice to have you here. And remember, if you're calling in at 1-800-348-2551, we'd love to hear your favorite short poems published by a known author. Remember, we're not reading our own poems today. We are here reading the works of others. Do you want to start with a poem,
sure,
Sarah?
Since it's Poetry Month, we always think that it's good to maybe read some poems called Ars Poetica, which are poems about the meaning of poetry.
Okay.
This one is by Eamon Grennan, a wonderful poet, and it's entitled Detail.
All right.
I was watching a robin fly after a finch, the smaller bird chirping with excitement, the bigger, its breast blazing, silent in light-winged earnest chase. When, out of nowhere, over the chimneys and the shivering front gardens, flashes a sparrowhawk headlong, a light brown burn scorching the air from which it simply plucks like a ripe fruit the stopped robin, whose two or three cheeps of terminal surprise twinkle in the silence, closing over the empty street when the birds have gone about their own business. And I began to understand how a poem can happen. You have your eye on a small, elusive detail, pursuing its music, when a terrible truth strikes and your heart cries out, being carried off.
That's lovely. That's lovely.
Thanks.
Now, I'll tell you what, Paul is getting his material together. Why don't we, at this point, introduce Stu Bartow, who's usually with us in the studio, and he is joining us via telephone today with a special guest. Stu, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you.
Tell us, would you like to read something before we get to your special guest today?
Yeah, the special guest, by the way, is Meg Carney.
Mm-hmm.
She was, the reason I'm not on air with Sarah and Paul is because we do the Writers Project here, and poet Meg Carney was gracious enough to come in and do a reading here for us today.
Okay,
so,
well, that's great.
And just to clarify something with Paul and Sarah.
Yeah.
We began in 1997.
Oh, my goodness.
1997, I'll be
and
darned.
And yet none of us is famous or rich yet?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I am.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Okay, I'm going to read... actually, I'm not very rich.
I'd argue with that.
Okay. Okay, the poem I'm going to read comes from Meg Carney's book, An Unkindness of Ravens, and the poem is called Curse. The difference between a raven and a crow is the intent of their blackness. The crow is a raven's shadow. The crow is a memory of a raven. Only a raven can transcend the raven to become a prophecy. We dream of crows, but the raven lands in our bed, wakes us wide-eyed and sweating rivers, rivers of our body's water running hot between our breasts, hot across our forehead and into our own black hair. It's a river I'm drowning in now, a river fed by my own murder of crows, and I alone can save me. 2,000 years ago, perhaps we rescued each other, and 1,000 years ago, a raven slid between us. Now here we are, clinging to opposite shores, each reaching a hand out toward the river's tongue, thinking somehow our tongues might save us this time, break the spell if we could just name it. I wish I could talk beyond surviving, beyond breathing, but I have a raven in my mouth. I have a river in my lungs, and no name is coming to me, only blackness, the lateness of the hour, the sound of wings beating.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, she's a wonderful poet. We're very happy to have had her here today, and she's going to come on in a minute as soon as you ask for her.
No, well, please do.
Okay.
Stu Bartow with Meg Carney.
Okay. It was good hearing you guys on the radio.
Well, I hope you come back into studio next time.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find my way to Albany.
Fair enough, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Here's Meg.
Thanks.
Hi, Meg.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Meg.
Meg Carney.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So how did you find yourselves in the company of Stu Bartow? I mean, how did that turn out?
It kind of was an invitation that came out of the blue. But I am a New Yorker, grew up in the Hudson Valley, used to be a member of WAMC when I lived up here. And so it's really great to be back in New York because I live in New England now and I miss it.
So nice to have you here. Would you like to read something for us?
Yes. I'm going to read a poem by a poet who lives just outside of Albany, New York. His name is George Drew. And okay. This is a poem from his book called The View from Jackass Hill. And it's George Drew. And the title of the poem is The Older I Get, The More I Think of Keats. The older I get, the more I think of Keats. Not Keats on his deathbed in Rome, but Keats, the moment he said goodbye to Fanny. Keats with her sure hand in his. I think of Keats drenched on a day like this one. That is, Keats boarding a coach in Hampstead, drowning. Keats, one hand in Fanny's, the other flailing. Keats, the moment before the door clicks shut, and Keats turns from Fanny and murmurs, alas, poor Keats. And I think of Fanny at the moment Keats pulled his hand away, how rather than the Keats of flesh and blood, the warm and capable Keats wooing her on the moors, what she had was Keats the disembodied, the loitering ghost of Keats. And then the moment passed, and so did Keats. Wasn't that great?
Poem. Yeah.
That was great. Meg Carney, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you for having me.
Your poem was amazing.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, next time you're up here, you're up here, you'll have to come in and do the Poetry Forum live here in the studio with us.
I would love to do that. I'm going to be at College of St. Rose tomorrow, but I guess that's a day off.
I think so. Well, Meg Carney, thanks so much for being here, and thanks, Stu, for us again, okay?
I will. Thanks again for having me.
Bye-bye. It is Vox Pop. It is the Poetry Forum. It's Poetry Month. Paul Elisha is here. Sarah Wiest is here. Your calls as well coming up at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Paul, you're a late arrival, but you seem now to be settled. Is there something before we go to break that you would like to read?
There really is.
Okay.
You know, there are so many people I feel that I owe for my sojourn in poetry. Mm-hmm. And one of those who had a tremendous effect on me and was an early mentor was Harvey Shapiro, the longtime editor of the New York Times Book Review, and himself really a great, great poet. What a lot of people didn't know about Harvey, who, by the way, passed away just a little under a month ago, was that he was a gunner in World War II, aboard a bomber, and did yeoman service, many, many sorties.
Europe or the Pacific?
Europe. And I thought going in, this would be my goodbye poem to Harvey.
Okay.
And it's called Veteran. I never thought I'd be a survivor and base everything on that strategy. Closing in on 50, almost un-American. Out of it. I'm close to myself again in my 50 mission photo. Poised in leather jacket, parachute harness, by the twin guns of the bomber. Breathing now. 20. Numb. A survivor.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
Paul Elisha is here. Sarah Wiest is here. And your favorite published poems are on the way. It is Vox Pop, the Poetry Forum, 1-800-348-2551. We kick it off with your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Children's Foundation of Astor, hosting an antique appraisal and reception benefit to help the children and families of Astor, Sunday, April 14th at 1, at Vassar Alumni House, astorservices.org. Woodstock School of Art, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more for all levels, tuition assistance available, woodstockschoolofart.org. Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, for 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York, foresightland.com. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, women owned and operated with a combined 70 years experience, eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638.
Welcome back to Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, the Poetry Forum. Sarah Wiest is here, Paul Elisha's here, Stu Bartow not here. Stu was over the phone, and he also wanted us to announce that Meg Carney, poetry reading tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. As Meg said, it's a 7:30 tomorrow night at the College of St. Rose, 420 Western Avenue, and it was awful nice to have Meg here as well. Let's go to the phones and why don't you say how you say your name?
it's in syllables, so it would be something like cha-cha-cha. So it's Alvilva.
Alvilva. I got it. You got the rhythm. You're on.
Yes. I love Walt Whitman because his poetry is very metaphysical. In my opinion, and
very American.
Yes, and for a long time, I stumbled upon him actually looking for people who had been discriminated in the United States, and I'm Puerto Rican, and he was very discriminated as an Irishman, and I was teaching at the time, and I wanted to introduce some of the work of other people who had been discriminated to my students. so that we didn't feel alone, that it was okay, he made it, and we were going to make it as Americans too. Mm-hmm. So when I read his work, I really love this one that says, I find Louisiana a live oak growing. All alone stood it, and the moss hung down from the branches. Without any companion, it grew there, uttering joyous leaves of dark green. And it looks rude, unbending. Lusty made me think of myself. But I wonder how it could utter joyous leaves standing alone there without its friend near, for I knew I could not. And I broke off a twig with a certain number of leaves upon it and twined around it a little moss and brought it away, and I have placed it in sight in my room.
Hmm. Very nice.
Very typical Whitman.
Thank you.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
I loved it too.
Thanks for being first on the show today. It's the Vox Pop Poetry Forum. Sarah Wiest, Paul Elisha are here. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. We go to Fred in Ware, Mass. Hi, Fred.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I got a couple of short poems with spring themes I like to do. One's very short, the other's pretty short, too.
Who are the poets?
Who are the poets?
Okay, first one is Piet Hein, a Danish poet who did a series of collections called Grooks, Volume 1 through 5.
Okay.
This is from the first one that I picked up many years ago. This is called The Miracle of Spring. We glibly talk of nature's laws, but do things have a natural cause? The black earth becoming yellow crocus is undiluted hocus pocus. And I'm not sure how they translate all these from Danish and still managed to rhyme, but they did. They were originally done in Danish, so that's quite a job with the all the poems rhyme out of the book. So I don't know how they did it. But
amazing.
Did it. Now the other one is from a book called Oriental Love Poems by Michelle Lavrek. It's just a compilation. This is from a poet named Chu Pang Yun from around 1100 BC.
Okay.
Or AD rather, China. This goes, I hardly noticed heaped red petals outside my window, already half a finger deep. Shadows of flowers shatter in the wind, and huddled in spring sleep, I suddenly wake up from wine. Here's that lovely one, finely featured, comes to whisper in my ear and asks, haven't you sobered up yet today? Such tenderness, softly and slowly, teasing me drunk again. I love that one because it combines the intoxication of wine and love and spring, you know, all of which are kind of put you in a different mood.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Fred, and I hope you enjoy your spring, maybe in a similar fashion. You never know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Bobby in Port Ewan, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm also going to read an excerpt from Crossing Brooklyn Ferry by Walt Whitman. It's something that I do almost every year, is join the folks from Poets House to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge. And we stop midway, and different poets read different poets' poems.
That's a great idea.
Yes. So this is, I'll just do a brief bit of Walt Whitman.
Okay.
Flood tide below me, I see you face to face. Clouds of the west, sun there half an hour high. I see you also face to face. Crowds of men and women, attired in the usual costumes. How curious you are to me. On the ferry boats, the hundreds and hundreds that cross, returning home, are more curious to me than you suppose. And you shall cross from shore to shore, years hence, are more to me, and more in my meditations than you might suppose. And I guess it's just always strikes me that, you know, so many, many years ago, he imagined other people.
Whoops, I think we lost you there. But that was That was very nice until the noise at the end. But thank you for being with us, Bobby, in Port Ewan. We appreciate it. Poetry Forum on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Nice catch by Zach the engineer to pot that down. Well done. Let's go to Jim in Lanesboro. Jim.
Hi, thanks a lot. You Are There by Erica Jong. It's J-O-N-G. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's Alan Shartok's cousin?
I've heard something of that.
Yeah, anyway, for what that's worth. Okay, You Are There by Erica Jong. You are there. You have always been there. Even when you thought you were climbing, you had already arrived. Even when you were breathing hard, you were at rest. Even then it was clear you were there. Not in our nature to know what is journey and what is arrival. Even if we knew, we would not admit. Even if we lived, we would think we were just germinating. To live is to be uncertain. Certainty comes at the end.
Hmm. Comments, poets?
Excuse me?
I wonder if our poets have a comment.
It's a typical Erica Jong poem.
Yeah. I see Alan in the control room. You know, your cousin's work was just on. He's nodding. So he knows, Jim. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the excellent poetry.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And excellent poets we have. Paul Elisha's here, Sarah Wiest here, and you there. Give us a call with your favorite published poem, not your own, maybe your favorite. 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. Vivian in Hillsdale. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I made a little mistake. I said this was by Jane Kenyon. It's actually about Jane Kenyon by her husband, Donald Hall.
Oh, yes.
And the thing to remember is that she died at 47, and this poem speaks to me about gratitude and about ordinary moments that we really don't pay attention to. It's called Summer Kitchen. In June's high light, she stood at the sink with a glass of wine and listened for the bobolink and crushed garlic in late sunshine. I watched her cooking from my chair. She pressed her lips together, reached for kitchenware, and tasted sauce from her fingertips. It's ready now. Come on, she said. You light the candle. We ate and talked and went to bed and slept. It was a miracle.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Very nice.
Nice, Vivian. Thank you, Vivian.
Thank you.
Bye. Poetry Forum on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Ronald in Averill Park is on. Hi, Ronald.
Hi. I would like to, recite a couple of lines from a poem from Samuel Taylor Coleridge, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And the reason why I want to do that is because many, many years ago when I was in high school, and I was on the football team, poetry was the furthest thing from my mind. And going into class at Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx, we were given a poetry assignment. And of course, I poo-pooed it. But when I started to read Coleridge, it opened up something in me that has been with me forever. And if you don't mind, I know it's a very famous poem, but I don't know how many people have heard it.
Of course.
It's also a very long poem.
Mr. Elisha, but I am only going to do a brief section.
Fair enough.
Okay. Believe me. And if I could have memorized the whole thing.
Did you, by the way?
No, but if I were able to, I think I would have another career ahead of me.
Ah, very good. Well, go right ahead, Ronald.
The fair breeze blew, the white foam flew, the furrow followed free, and we were the first that ever burst into that silent sea. Day after day, day after day, we struck no breath, no motion, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. All in the hot and copper sky, the bloody sun at noon did rise above the masthead, no bigger than the moon. Water, water everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any a drop to drink. I thank you very much.
Hey, Ronald, thank you very much.
You did a great job on that.
Well, like I said, I've only had it rattling around my head for some 60 years.
Pretty good. Well,
yeah, good job. Thanks a lot.
Can still find it.
Let's go to Cheney in Amherst. You're on. Hello?
Hello?
You're on.
Yeah, this is Jamie. And...
Oh, Jamie. It says Cheney. I thought Dick Cheney was calling in. It's Jamie.
Oh, no.
All right. Jamie. Well, fair enough, Jamie or Cheney or whatever. Go ahead.
Okay, this is a poem by Rilke, the German poet, and the title is Fall, as in the season.
Okay.
The leaves fall as if from far away, as if distant gardens were wilting in the heavens. They fall as if they were saying no. And into each night the heavy earth falls. Out of the stars, into solitude. We all are falling. Here, this hand is falling. And look at others too. So it is with everything. And yet there is one who holds this falling endlessly, gently, in his hand.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, well, he's not Rilke for nothing.
That's beautiful.
His beautiful poetry.
Jamie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right, let's go over to, and by the way, the number to call if you have a favorite published poem is 1-800-348-2551. Not your own work. That is for a different program, which actually we've never had. It'll be for a different author. David in Dalton, Massachusetts. David, you're on.
Hello. This is my favorite poem. Daffodils by William Wordsworth.
Oh, yes.
I'll just read the first and the last verses. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. That's been my favorite poem since high school.
You know, it's wonderful to hear it read.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I love his inward eye.
I know. Mm.
Thank you so much.
David, wonderful. Thank you very much for the call.
Beautiful.
Let's go to Pauline in Rexford. Pauline, you're on.
Thank you. I just want to say I'm so happy you're having this poetry forum. I love poetry. But anyway, the poem I wanted to read is called Otherwise by Jane Kenyon. And I know someone just read a poem about Jane Kenyon by her husband.
Yes.
Right.
But this is, I think as people get older, this kind of poem means more. Anyway, I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birch wood. All morning, I did the work I love. At noon, I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls, and planned another day just like this day. But one day, I know, it will be otherwise.
Yes.
That was nice. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tying it together with the earlier piece. We appreciate it. Let's go to Ethan in Jewett, New York. Ethan, you're on.
Hi. I was hoping to read a poem called Dream On by James Tate.
Okay.
I hope it's not too long here.
How long is it?
It's about a page.
Paul is nodding, and Paul is the boss when he comes in. So listen, I go with what Paul says. Go ahead, Ethan.
All right, here we go. Some people go their whole lives without ever writing a single poem. Extraordinary people who don't hesitate to cut somebody's heart or skull open. They go to baseball games with the greatest of ease and play a few rounds of golf as if it were nothing. These same people stroll into a church as if that were a natural part of life. Investing money is second nature to them. They contribute to political campaigns that have absolutely no poetry in them and promise none for the future. They sit around the dinner table at night and pretend as though nothing is missing. Their children get caught shoplifting at the mall, and no one admits that it is poetry they are missing. The family dog howls all night, lonely and starving, for more poetry in his life. Why is it so difficult for them to see that without poetry, their lives are effluvial? Sure, they have their banquets, their celebrations, croquet, fox hunts, their seashores and sunsets, their cocktails on the balcony, dog races, and all that kissing and hugging. And don't forget the good deeds, the charity work, nursing the baby squirrels all through the night, filling the bird feeders all winter, helping the stranger change her tire. Still, there's that disagreeable exhalation from decaying matter, subtle but ever present. They walk around, erect like champions. They are smooth-spoken and witty. When alone, rare occasion, they stare into the mirror for hours, bewildered. There is something they meant to say but didn't. And if we put the statue of the rhinoceros next to the tweezers and walk around the room three times, learn to yodel, shave our heads, call our ancestors back from the dead, poetry-wise, it's still a bust, bankrupt. You haven't scribbled a syllable of it. You're a nowhere man, misfiring the very essence of your life, flustering nothing from nothing and back again. The hereafter may not last all that long. Radiant childhood, sweetheart, secret code of everlasting joy and sorrow, fanciful pen strokes beneath the eyelids, all day, all night meditation, knot of hope, kernel of desire, pure ordinariness of life, seeking through poetry a benediction, or a bed to lie down on, to connect, reveal, explore, to imbue meaning on the day's extravagant labor. And yet, it's cruel to expect too much. It's a rare species of bird that refuses to be categorized. Its song is barely audible. It's like a dragonfly in a dream. Here, then there, then here again, low-flying amber wing darting upward, then out of sight. And the dream has a pain in its heart, the wonders of which are manifold, or so the story is told.
James Tate is a marvelously tongue-in-cheek poet, and we really don't get to hear much of him. We haven't on this program, and I wanted to see what poem was going to be read.
Yeah.
And you did a great job, by the way.
Ethan, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Great job.
Appreciate it. Let's take a break, Zach. We'll get back to the poems and more coming up on Vox Pop. Number to call is 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in residential and institutional buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Susan Odell Taylor School, Troy, New York. Preschool through sixth grade, educating children in the capital region since 1998. School day tours available, nurturing minds, shaping the future, taylorschool.org. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York. Serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeanddeli.com. And Albany Institute of History and Art, presenting The Legacy of Currier and Ives, Shaping the American Spirit, now through June 15th, albanyinstitute.org.
one 800 348. It's the Poetry Forum on Vox Pop. Sarah West is here, also Paul Elisha. And Paul, you wanted to read something.
Well, this isn't quite as long as...
as Ethan's James Tate poem, yeah.
But it's another poet to whom I feel I owe a great deal, and one who's been on with us. William J. Smith,
okay.
Former poet laureate. And the reason that I wanted to read this, Bill Smith's grandmother was a Choctaw Indian.
Mm-hmm.
His father was an Indian, a regular army man. And Bill felt he had a debt to pay, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his great poems, which was really a full book, was called The Cherokee Lottery.
Okay.
And in it was a marvelous poem called The Song of the Dispossessed. And I thought, in a tribute to Bill, that I would like to read it.
Great.
You came across the water. Like gods, you walked ashore. The fabric of our dreaming was the clothing that you wore. You came with ornament far brighter than the sun. You brought the handsome horse, the flashing blade, the gun. You brought your holy book that held a world entire, a life that never ended, and water that was fire. You said, we'll live as brothers we will die. We'll share the forest carpet and the blanket of the sky. But then when we came near you, you said, now move away. You come too close now, brother. It's dangerous to stay. So close to one another, and you must understand that we know what is better. We'll send you to a land far richer in the west, beyond the great brown river, where grass is always green, and there you'll live forever. And so you took our country, you took our sacred ground, the birds and beasts we cherished, the falling water's sound, the stag that with his antlers breaks the sun-flecked trail, the mockingbird, the turkey, the heron, and the quail. You sent us to this desert, this sand, these pitted stones, where wind rakes through the gully and bears the bison's bones. And now, above this barren earth, your great bald eagle screams that robbed us of our country and carried off our dreams.
Mm. Hmm. It's Paul Elisha. It is the Poetry Forum on WAMC Vox Pop. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Juliana in Rhinebeck. Juliana, your turn.
Yes, hello. I'm calling with one of my favorite poets. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. It's Wisława Szymborska, I think.
Oh, yes.
And the poem that I chose is called Discovery. And I apologize in advance for the way that I'm going to read it. It is, I believe in the great discovery. I believe in the man who will make the discovery. I believe in the fear of the man who will make the discovery. I believe in his face going white, his queasiness, his upper lip drenched in cold sweat. I believe in the burning of his notes, burning them into ashes, burning them to the last scrap. I believe in the scattering of numbers, scattering them without regret. I believe in the man's haste, in the precision of his movements, in his free will. I believe in the shattering of tablets, the pouring out of liquids, the extinguishing of rays. I am convinced this will end well, that it will not be too late, that it will take place without witnesses. I'm sure no one will find out what happened, not the wife, not the wall, not even the bird that might squeal in its song. I believe in the refusal to take part. I believe in the ruined career. I believe in the wasted years of work. I believe in the secret taken to the grave. These words soar for me beyond all rules. Without seeking support from actual examples, my faith is strong, blind, and without foundation.
She's an amazing poet.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you were apologizing in advance, because you read it so well.
I get very anxious when I'm on the phone.
Juliana, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. It's the Poetry Forum. Alexandra in Stockbridge, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
It's funny, I was going to read a poem by Anne Sexton about Icarus, And
it's a great poem.
To a friend whose work has come to triumph. Yeah, but then I remembered that it's Poetry Month, and it would be really very kind to sort of find a poem that has to do about the writing, the coming of the muse or the writing,
sure.
Right? And so out of the blue while waiting, I found an Anne Sexton poem I'd never in my whole life seen, and actually it was an exercise, and it's exactly what it's about. And she wrote it as an exercise when she spent a week in Antioch in 1958. That's all I do know, and that it's an exercise, and here it is.
Okay, great.
It has no title. Busy with an idea for a code, I write signals, hurrying from left to right, or right to left, by obscure routes, for my own reasons. Taking a word like rights, down tiers of tries, until its secret rights make sense, or until suddenly rats can amazingly and funnily become star, and right to left, that small star is mine, for my own liking, to stare its five lucky pins inside out, to store forever kindly, as if it were a star I touched and a miracle I really wrote. That's it.
You know, Anne Sexton is not your ordinary poet.
No, she actually is quite extraordinary because she mingled with extraordinary people, and actually, if she hadn't had a fantastic psychiatrist, which are hard to come by at this point in time, she would have never even known that that gift was in her, so in her that she couldn't stop once he got her to start.
And also some very loyal friends who are great poets, too.
Yes. Well, for one, we know Sylvia Plath.
Yes.
Who took her life before Anne Sexton. And then there's a whole series, Odin. Gosh, there's Don Holm. But it was her doctor that she was basically her muse, because I loved her collection, which I gave away, Words to Dr. Y. And then she continued to go on and do little plays. And I mean, this really is an exercise. The one I was going to read is quite beautiful, and it's very, very Anne Sexton.
Well, that was lovely in itself, Alexandra, and thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Corrine in Pittsfield. Corrine, you're on.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
I'd like to read I Remember by Thomas Hood.
Okay.
I remember the house where I was born, the little window where the sun came peeping in at morn. He never came a wink too soon, nor brought too long a day. But now I often wish the night had borne my breath away. I remember the roses red and white, the violets and the lily cups, their flowers made of light. The lilies where the robin built, and where my brother set the labanum for his birthday. The tree is living yet. I remember.
Where I was used to swing.
And thought the air would rush as fresh as swallows on the wing. My spirit flew
in feathers then
that is so heavy now
and summer pools could hardly cool
the fever on my brow. I remember
the fir trees
dark and high. I used to think their slender tops were close against the sky. It was a childhood ignorance. But now there's little joy to know I'm farther off from heaven than when I was a boy.
Well, Corrine, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a beautiful poem.
Thanks very much. We go to Arthur and Rhinebeck. Arthur.
Yes.
You're on.
Okay. Hello?
Hello. You're on with Paul Elisha and Sarah Wiest.
Right. You know, this reading of poetry in the spring has become a tradition for me. For the last several years, I've called in one particular poem which has always marked the beginning of the spring season. It's a poem that I learned when I was a schoolboy in the 40s in Brooklyn. And I'm sure you'll recognize it when I read it.
Who's the poet?
I don't know. And I looked, I tried to discover who the poet was. I went on Google, and there were over 3,000 references to the first line of this poem. And then when I put in origins, looking for an attribution, they didn't come up with anything. So perhaps someone out there knows more about the origin of this than
okay.
I do.
Okay, all right.
So anyway,
maybe one of our listeners will.
Yeah, we'll have to move it along, and we only have a couple of minutes left. So go
sure,
right ahead.
In my best Brooklyn accent, spring is here, the grass has riz. I wonder where the birdies is. They say the birds is on the wing. My word, how absurd! I always thought the wing was on the bird. Thank you.
All right, well done. Okay, thank you, Arthur. We appreciate it very much. Jackie in Williamsburg. Jackie, you're on.
Hi. I'd like to read a very beautiful poem by Sarah Teasdale called I Am Not Yours.
Okay.
I just came across this poem. It was set to music very beautifully and sung by the Holyoke Mass High School Madrigal Choir in the WGBY choral program, Together in Song. You can find it, you can Google it, and listen to this set to music, and it's thrilling.
All right, lovely.
I am not yours. I am not yours, not lost in you, not lost, although I long to be lost as a candle lit at noon, lost as a snowflake in the sea. You love me, and I find you still a spirit beautiful and bright. Yet I am I, who long to be lost as a light is lost in light. Oh, plunge me deep in love. Put out my senses. Leave me deaf and blind. Swept by the tempest of your love, a taper in a rushing wind.
Jackie, thank you very much. And Joy in Delhi. Joy, now listen, we only have about 30 seconds here. So you say
this is
a short one.
Six Lines by Jane Kenyon.
All right. This will be perfect to close things up. Go ahead.
The shirt. The shirt touches his neck and smooths over his back. It slides down his sides. It even goes down below his belt, down into his pants. Lucky shirt.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's a great way to end the program. Thank you. And thanks to everybody who called in. Paul Elisha, I'm glad you made it through the traffic jam.
So am I.
So nice to have you back here again, my friend. And Sarah Wiest, we'll
Thank
see
you.
You for the next one. Yes?
Yes.
And we'll make Stu Bartow show up in person. This was, having him on the phone, it's just not the same. Hey, thanks to everybody who called in. We appreciate it. Support coming. Why did I take my glasses off?
And
Paul says, and keep reading poetry. Good point. Now comes the prose. Here we go. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Additional support comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, berkshire.coop. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages, auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more, capcomfcu.org. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. That's it for Vox Pop this afternoon. Thanks again for calling, and sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to Stu, thanks to Meg Carney, thanks to Sarah Wiest and Paul Elisha, and well, thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls. So darn well, Colleen O'Connell answered the phone calls, Patrick Donges, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.